It's Susie from MERP, and I'm here with Eric of Watain. Hello, and welcome to Portland.
Thank you so much.
First, I wanted to say we have a mutual friend, and she wanted me to say hello. Mm-hmm. Her name is Kristen. She goes by Gypsy.
Oh, yeah.
And she said to tell you hello.
Oh, Gypsy, yeah. Good memories from Gypsy and that behemoth Devil's Blood in Solitude tour we did in 2012, I believe.
You're touring on Trident Wolf Eclipse that was released earlier this year, and I wanted to talk to you about the title. I read that it's a reference to Watain and what it has become, and I think I figured it out, so I want to see if I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
So Trident is for the three original members that have stayed together.
Mm-hmm.
Wolf is a spiritual animal that's important to you, and Eclipse is sort of that it has overshadowed or encompassed what the three of you have become, that Watain has kind of taken on its own thing. Am I right?
There is no right or wrong, but it's a very clear-sighted interpretation of the title. Absolutely. I appreciate that. I think what we always try to do with our titles is kind of leave them as a one-sentence poem for people to reflect on, and I think we never worked with very definite titles per se. They're always kind of open for interpretation, as is everything with Watain, really. You know? I don't like to, what's the English word for it, like write people on the nose. Is that an English saying? Yeah. I like people to think for themselves, which you clearly did, and it's always interesting to hear different people's interpretations. That was a good one. I think generally, you know, the title comes from the three main symbols that we have used for a very long time, the ones that we have on our back patch since many, many years back, the Trident and the Wolf and the Eclipse. And they are, of course, each of them quite vast in their own symbology. You know, you can really talk for a long time about each of those symbols. But yeah, there you go. I mean, that's definitely a interpretation.
That it can be so literal and then so vast.
Absolutely.
So very clever. The three of you, what do you attribute to the three of you staying together for so long?
I think it's one of the most valuable assets that we have in Watain, the fact that we have stayed together for 20 years, the same core, you know, the same 16-year-olds that formed the band in our hometown in 1998. It's something that, you know, as a metal fan myself and someone who is really, you know, keen on knowledge about my favorite bands and so on, I mean, it's something that you come to realize pretty quickly how much that it means to a band when you have a solid core that actually just maintains whatever they've got going throughout all the years, you know. And then it's an accomplishment, really. Something that I feel very, if not proud, at least very humble and thankful for, you know, that we have been blessed with that kind of brotherhood between us.
The biggest fan question people wanted me to ask you was about the incident in Brooklyn in 2014.
Yeah.
I just want to know, did, you know, TMZ and other major media picking that up, did it make for more fans or for less fans?
I don't know if I'm the right person to ask. It's probably something that the management were thrilled, so to say. They were quite happy about it. I don't know. I just dealt with it, I guess. I just answered a bunch of interviews and had a few pretty awkward conversations with people that didn't have the slightest clue of not only about what Watain was, but about black metal in general. And if you come as a journalist to a Watain show without having, you know, any preconceived notions of what it might be or any, you know, proper idea of, you know, black metal history and so on, and you still want to write a juicy piece, well, there you go. That's what you're going to end up with, you know. I personally don't have a problem with it. I've seen it happen hundreds of times with other favorite bands of mine, you know. It's a classic hard rock scenario, really. So I don't mind. I thought it was fine. It was basically just about them, you know, writing about how bloody and outrageous the show was. And I mean, yeah, it is. it is. So.
There's so many things I want to ask you.
I'm just going to go away
from my list. Merciful Fate, for instance, I know they had an influence on you. They're one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
And I saw them the very first time they came to the United States. They played in Portland.
Oh, no shit.
It was fantastic, but it was so controversial.
When was this?
1984.
Four, yeah, exactly.
Something
Four,
like that, yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to find out, what was the first band that you saw live?
The first band that I saw live properly was Metallica on their Black Album tour, actually. And, well, I mean, it turned my whole world upside down. I mean, I was already as much a Metallica fan as a 11-year-old could be at that time, but seeing it live, you know, it was... At that time, I didn't really have any proper like conception of what a huge arena concert would be like. I've seen, you know, VHSs of concerts, but I had no idea that you... It wasn't really in my world that you could actually be there and be a part of it. And they opened with Creeping Death and shitloads of pyro, and I was just like, well, I think that was a very, very life-changing moment for me, definitely.
Regarding your stage props and rituals that you do, where are you most free? What country are you most free to do what you want?
Oh, it's easier to pinpoint where we are not.
That
so
was my
free,
next question. Actually, so, okay, we can do that.
Because I think most, you know, Sweden, Europe in general, is usually never really a problem. It requires quite a lot of advanced work, which we have a fantastic production team that's always working hard on, you know, getting everything right and preparing the venue for what's to come, pretty much. The US is a little bit harder, actually, when it comes to that. And I... it's a different political setup, it's a different cultural climate, everything is just different the way things, I mean, the economical structure, everything is just, it's different, you know. So I think the general climate in the US, perhaps, from what I've gathered, it kind of makes for venues being a little bit more uptight, because they really want to make sure that no one gets hurt, or no one gets upset, that, you know, that whole thing. And that's something, unfortunately, we notice very obviously when we're touring here. It's really a day-to-day issue, like, okay, tonight we can do this, but we can't do that. And yeah, it's something that we're dealing with frequently.
I've interviewed Mayhem, and they have said that sometimes fans or promoters or venues, things like that, push them further than they want to go. Sometimes they're just over it, and they don't want to have so much ritual or be in such a shocking fashion. Has that ever happened for you, that you feel pushed to do things that you maybe...
No. No, I wouldn't say that. No. There's almost always something that we have to take away. You know, there's always something we want to do more. Which in a way is a good thing, you know. It creates a little bit of pressure and tension that I think ultimately becomes something beneficial for what we're doing on stage. But it's tricky in the US. But on the other hand, like, we did a show in Seattle yesterday where we were just allowed to do everything. And you can tell by the crowd that, you know, that experience is a rare thing. And those nights kind of makes it all worthwhile, you know. And then it's a shame, though, that we never really know properly in advance where it's going to be like that and where it's not. But, hey. You know,
but you're easily prepared for either, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's an important thing to underline, that we never feel compromised, you know, as such, because if we would, it wouldn't really be worth it even bothering going on tour here. But we have different kind of setups for different scenarios, right? And that's in fact something that I also enjoy touring the US, because it gets a little bit, it becomes more diverse, you know.
It's not mundane.
Yeah, no. Yeah, well, it becomes more diverse. It becomes more like from day to day, different kind of shows. You have to adapt. You have to you know, refocus, do different things every night. And I think that ultimately that leads to something quite good.
Lawless Darkness was really well received by critics, and you won a Swedish Grammy for it.
Yeah.
Do you pay attention to those marks? Are they important to you?
Well, I mean, we get asked a lot about it. People mention it a lot. I can't say that it changed us at all. You know, I mean, for us it was like about going to the Royal Opera in Stockholm one night and receiving this weird award and going on stage in front of, you know, 800 people that didn't have the slightest clue what we were about and saying things about what we believed in and what we think is important. And that was quite awkward, quite interesting, quite memorable. But as an award in itself, I think I measure success by other parameters than awards and things like that.
So if you wrote an album that everybody hated, every critic said was awful, would you make adjustments or would you be like, I don't care?
No, we wouldn't. And I think that's the fact that you're asking the question, which is a relevant question, but the fact that it's still asked in this day and age is... It's a bit sad. I mean, it is, you know, because the answer should be obvious, I think. From my perspective, I mean, if you are an artist, you do what you believe in. If people like it, great, you know. Then they see that it's honest, they see that it's genuine, and things get rolling, right? But if you start to adapt, if you start to put pressure on yourself that you gotta meet people's expectations and so on, that's where a lot of bands that I love have lost their focus and just turned into something that I don't even think they themselves have been that proud of, you know. So that's always been a key idea that we had in Matane, that no matter what, we go from the gut, always, you know, and then we see what happens.
See, that answer proves that you're a true artist. You'd be surprised how many people don't have that answer, and it's about money.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know, but for me, it goes for most areas in life, you know. I think that being genuine and being honest and being straightforward pays off. That's, you know, if people are hungry for money, start with being honest, because that's going to pay off, you know. If you got something good to say, something that people might take to them, yeah, say it and see what happens.
What are you most proud of with Trident Wolf Eclipse?
One of the things that I guess I'm most proud of is that it captures a feeling that I think we have been after since the day we started, as far as something very, there's something very predatory and something very genuinely hostile in there that is not forced at all, that is just evoked and put into music. And I think being able to reach that after so many years and you know, having gone from being 16-year-olds with a vision onto, you know, being 35-year-olds fulfilling that vision, or at least being close to fulfilling that vision, that's something that I suppose I could say I take a bit of pride in, at least something that I consider myself blessed for, you know.
I'm going to see if I can word this question right. I've seen you multiple times, mm-hmm. and I love black metal. I love how I feel when I listen to it, but being a girl from Oregon in the mm-hmm. United States, mm-hmm. I don't feel like I can ever truly understand everything that black metal is about, because mm-hmm. it feels like black metal comes from Sweden and Norway and maybe Poland with Behemoth, but mm-hmm. you think a band from like Portland or Seattle can ever put together a black metal band that is the whole essence of black metal, not just replicating the music or having that genre of music?
Well, first of all, I mean, you mentioned being a girl from Portland, and that, I mean, the gender issue, I think, is irrelevant in this whole context. I mean, I know as many, the handful of respectable black metal admirers, like people who live and die for black metal, that I know are an equal amount of women and men. So that doesn't really play into it. The geographical side is interesting because there is something in Scandinavia in relation to black metal that is unmatched, or at least unparalleled in terms of what I feel emotionally, you know, when I listen to it or when I experience it, like seeing a classic traditional Scandinavian black metal band, and they are few in my book. They are very few, but still, you know, that experience for me is something that hasn't really been that I haven't really experienced with any band outside of Scandinavia. But with that being said, I mean, I'm a avid worshipper of, for example, South American black and death metal from the 80s, and they have as much, you know, genuine, unparalleled, unique scene going on there, or at least they had in the 80s, which goes for Scandinavia as well. I mean, that's when the most of the things happened, in the 80s and the 90s. No, I think there is definitely something about Scandinavia that makes for a specific branch of black metal, if you will. I don't know what it is. I've never had the slightest interest in nationalism even, or, you know, I've never really bothered with lines on a map between countries. That's a man-made thing as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, geographically, I mean, I think different kind of climates, different kind of cultures will makes for different kind of artistic expressions. That's just the way it is. But what you were asking is that whether or not you could fully comprehend it the way we do, or I don't know if I...
The full essence of it. I mean, I guess more than just hearing the music and it's appealing and you like it, but just feeling...
Well, I think that you experience it out of your own, through your own filter, you know, through your cultural filter and from your own background. And I think that is not necessarily... I think in the end that comes down to something that is individual rather than, you know, geographical. I think that, you know, freight train hopping, crust punk will experience Vatain in a different way than a, you know, bagel eating hipster guy, although both are from Portland. You know, it's individual perception in the end, I think, and that makes it interesting. That's you know, a thing that keeps what we're doing kind of alive and away from stagnation, kind of, because you always have these different kind of perceptions about what we do.
I read that a common belief system is a must in order to do something so personal as putting out music or writing music. Would Wattain sustain if a member decided they got married and she was Buddhist and they wanted to explore Buddhism or Christianity or whatever?
No, we wouldn't. Because taking up and converting, for example, to any religion would complicate things way too much. What Vatain is built on is a common sense of reverence and humbleness and respect towards the symbols that we have charged, our own pantheon of gods that we have in Vatain. And that is a crucial aspect, you know. It's not necessarily something that needs to be over-defined. I mean, it's something that has grown and changed and transformed itself into what it is today over the course of 20 years between, you know, the three core members of the band. So it's not something that could be abandoned, you know. It wouldn't work. But I also have a very, very hard time seeing that happen. You know?
I think since it's such a core belief, you know, and such a core unity,
yeah.
I think.
I think most people who have followed a very kind of a narrow path for 20 years of their lives, you know, adult years, I think they'll find themselves very comfortable and very at home with those ideas. And unless you go through some, you know, severe trauma, or I don't know why, what makes people convert to other belief systems when they are in their 40s, I don't know, I can't really relate to that, but I have a very hard time seeing that happen.
Yeah. It is, I feel lucky, I feel sorry for people who just stay on the path that they're told they're supposed to go on. I mean, I know I've gone through that too, and I feel lucky that I've had to figure out what my belief system is, figure out who I am. So I think it's an important thing, and I think it's great that you have, you know, people around you that also share in that. That's pretty powerful.
Of course, of course.
20 years of Watain. Do you have any special plans for an anniversary or?
Well, we so we released Trident Wolf Eclipse on the 5th of January of 2018, which is also our 20-year anniversary year. So we had we did actually do a in relation to the release of the album, we also did a release show, and on that release show we had a huge 20-year exhibition, you could say, with it was quite overwhelming seeing it come together, because we had all those, we always archived everything, you know, from day one, kind of every sticker, every backstage pass, every shirt, every concert poster, everything, literally everything, and we just kept it in boxes, you know. So we brought all those boxes there and had two Swedish like gallery artists put it together for us. And it was, I don't know, first it was going to be just like a side thing, but for me it was like the thing of the whole night, you know. It was very special to see it all up there. And I hope that we could do something similar somewhere else throughout the year, but it's looking pretty grim as far as touring goes. I think we're gonna have to keep that for the 30-year anniversary, something. We'll see.
Was that captured on video? Would we ever see it in like a DVD or something?
There
like
is
that?
Some stuff on Swedish television, and there is actually a lot of good photo documentation of it that we're probably gonna do something with sooner or later.
That'll be nice to see. Just a couple more questions.
Sure.
I read that Watain makes people feel unsettled and shakes them out of their comfort zone. You kind of touched on that a little bit. What do you have anything you'd like to add to that, or why you feel that way?
Well, I mean, take the concert scenario as an obvious example. There are not that many times in people's lives, even though if they're like wild metalheads, fucking biker, whatever people, you know, there are not that many times in anyone's life that they stand face to face with people who are drenched in blood. There's fire everywhere. There's very loud, very dramatic music going on, and there's obvious, you know, there's an emotional explosion, you know, going on stage. That setting is quite rare, even for a concert, I would say. And yeah, I do think it creates a room for people where they can have a different kind of experience, not only with what they're seeing, but also perhaps with themselves, how they're experiencing it. You know, I think that a lot of people find themselves thinking different kind of thoughts, or I hope so at least, you know, than what they might do in their everyday life. And I think that's important. I really do. I think that's, you know, it's if we can do that, I don't know. I can't really pinpoint why it's important, but I really think it is. You know, when I've had similar experiences, I've been very grateful for them. You know, they've taken me somewhere, and I've left a different person, and I think that's a good positive thing.
I think it's awesome, that amount of responsibility. I think forcing people to take a stand on what they believe or know that it's something that they should think about or can think about. I think that's great. We have, when Mayhem was here, like this year, last, I don't know, it wasn't that long ago, we have, you know, Antifa issues here as well. Do you ever just get so tired of it?
We haven't dealt so much with Antifa, to be honest. But they're around, and they've been giving us shit, of course. They're giving everyone who has a awkward, unmodern, perhaps raw, savage worldview. They're giving everyone a problem. So, you know, what can I say that I haven't said or that hasn't been said about these people? I think that the idea of fighting fascism with fascist methods is quite hypocritical. I don't like hypocrisy. I think it's awful. I've spent my whole life trying to stay away from it. So I have an extremely problematic relationship to, I don't have high thoughts of these people at all. I think they're doing more damage than good. You know, it could be a just cause, but it failed somewhere along the way, and it became something radically different, something that's, you know, it gives a flat tire to a subculture that they should be happy that it still exists in this. I mean, look at who's running this country. You know, I mean, face the real problems, face the real problems, and don't go hunting for ghosts. Well, I mean, you know, most people from America that I speak to have I think extremely clear-sighted, you know, like have a very strong, good opinions about politics, and like are very, I don't know, just very people that are very aware of what's going on. So I'm definitely I'm not, you know, like yeah, most Americans that I meet are very, you know, solid, good people. It's just that this whole Antifa thing, for example, it gives a bad name to a lot of people that shouldn't have one. You know?
The last question I have is, what are your hopes for Wu-Tang for 2018?
I hope that we once again are going to go through a year where we manage to triumphantly eliminate everything that is now standing in our way. I hope that we are going to give a lot of empowerment and good, radical, fiery energy to the people who come to our shows and that are hungry for it, you know. I hope that we're gonna be at the end of the year with a very good and triumphant feeling. Feeling that we are once again, you know, achieved what we're here to do.
Okay, good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.